Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we are in a brand new location as I have now moved into Chicago for my new job that I actually start when you'll be listening to this on a Monday, October 13th, which is pretty exciting. You know, it's certainly a change, and a lot has also changed in the world of the UFC after UFC Rio. Yeah, we're going to be recapping UFC Rio on today's episode. We went 11-1 on predictions, one of my best predicting cards of all time. I was overjoyed watching, especially the main event and co-main event, and I made a lot of money on bets, and then, of course, lots of dollars on NFL Sunday, because I have no idea how betting works here, but now that we can bet, we're actually going to be placing money each week on my UFC predictions. So we're going to recap UFC Rio and talk about what is next for each and every one of the fighters. Also, we're going to be recapping week 6 of the NFL season. There are still 3 games left to be played, so I am recording this before the Lions and Chiefs game, and of course before the Monday Night Football doubleheaders, Bears, Commanders, Bills, and Falcons, as I will be starting my first day, and I have no idea the state I'll be in afterwards, if I'll be tired, if I'll be revving to go. I don't even know what time to go to bed or wake up in the morning. Like, it's pretty chaotic. Also going to be recapping WWE Crown Jewel, fun PLE that went down this weekend. I wasn't able to watch it live, but I did go back and rewatch all the highlights, and I know the gist of everything, and we're going to be kicking off the card, actually, with Dana White's Contender Series Week 9. Week 10, the season finale for season 9. So without further ado, let's not waste any time and get right on into 9.10, the final episode of Dana White's Contender Series for season 9. And guess what? It has 6 matchups on it. I'm super excited. It goes down on Tuesday the 14th. And you know what? I think we're going to have 6 new stars in the UFC after this card is officially done with, because we got some fun ones here. I mean, the names I'm about to tell you are all real. They're all real fighters. And I'll stop dragging this out, guys. Let's get right on into our predictions. Starting us off, we are heading to the middleweight division as we have Mario Mingaj taking on Wes Party Time Schultz. And Wes has actually been on the Contender Series before. He is 7-2. As for Mario, he is 7-0, undefeated. Both men naturally fight in the middleweight division outside the UFC, and here they will be colliding to open up our card on Tuesday night. Mario, 26 years old, is from Italy. Of his 7 wins, he has 1 KO and 5 subs, and of those 6 finishes, 4 have came in round number 1. His last 2 fights were in Cage Warriors, winning both of those matchups, and that last fight he did have was in November of 2024. Now, he did have a canceled bout in March of this year, so he was trying to stay active, but it has been just about a year since he has last fought. But hey, we need more Italian fighters in the UFC. We have Marvin Vettori, and I think that might be it. I kid you not, that might be it. So we'll see how Mario does when he debuts against Wes Schultz. Wes is 29 years old, from Wisconsin, and actually went to La Crosse University. That's right, Wisconsin La Crosse. It is, or is it Masson? La Crosse, one of which I've actually been to this college, and I have had some good times there. I was actually there about 2 weekends ago, I want to say, so that's actually pretty near to me compared to other places. And he trains at Pura Vida in Wisconsin, same gym as Nick Klein, Montel Jackson, who just fought, a lot of notable names that we've had. Montel Jackson's probably the biggest name at the moment. He's 4-1 in the LFA, which is where he has had a majority of his fights. Of his 7 wins, 2 KOs and 4 subs, 6 finishes, and 5 of them have came in round number 1. His last win came in April, so he is on a little one-fight winning streak, but the last time he did lose was on last season, Season 8 of Dan White's Contender Series, where he was knocked out in Round 2 by Mansoor Abdul-Malik. Now, he did find success in that fight, I will say. He was able to land 2 takedowns in that round before eventually succumbing to Mansoor Abdul-Malik, who is, by the way, still undefeated, still very dominant, so I don't think that's a bad loss whatsoever to have on your record. West looks, you know, decent from what I've seen. I mean, fighting in the LFA is certainly pretty good, but I'm always biased towards these guys from countries that are on the come up. Mario, I don't want to say he's fought necessarily the best competition, but worst guy he's fought in was when he was 3-0. He fought a guy who was 4-5, and his last win was over a guy who was 7-2, submitted him in under 2 minutes. So I'm probably going to lean with Mario to get this one done. I just want more, Italian fighters in the UFC. So I'm going to predict him. He has 1 KO and 5 subs. We'll say Mario Miyagi gets it done by submission. We'll be rooting for him for no real reason. Like, I have zero bias whatsoever with these fights, but, you know, it's still fun to predict them. And there have been some where we've gone 5-0, and I am yet to go an entire Dana White's Contender Series card without predicting a fight wrong, you know, so we've been doing pretty good. Moving on, we get to our last heavyweight fight of the season. I love heavyweights, and we need heavyweights in the UFC. This one is between Azamat Dragon Nuftalev and Jovan Leka. That's right, Azamat Dragon Nuftalev, taking on Jovan Leka. Okay, I can get behind these boys. Azamat, 17-1-1, very impressive record. Jovan is 10-2. They both fight in the orthodox fighting position. Big age gap here, 31-23. That's right, Jovan is my age of 23 years of being on this earth. And as for Azamat, he is the favorite, and it is warranted, as the 31-year-old from Uzbekistan is on a 5-fight winning streak of his 17 wins. 15 are by finish. 11 of those have came in round one. He has 11 knockouts and 4 subs on his record. His last win came in July. And, I mean, it's hard not to be high on this guy, especially coming in 17-1. You know, when they come in with a lot of experience, it certainly means they're usually good. And Uzbekistan, you know, this reminds me of Nursultan Ruzaboyev. He's a guy who's come out of the Uzbekistan region. And records of his last few opponents, 11-6. He won the belt in Octagon, actually, back in July, his last fight, 53-second submission, 11-8, 15-4, that's a good record, 7-9, 7-4, his last defeat was to Slim Trabalsay, and Slim Trabalsay is actually pretty good. He recently lost on the PFL Champion Series in his first professional bout, but other than that, he beat Azamat. And you want to know another guy that he's actually fought in? Oh, I thought it was the guy that we had just beaten. He beat Louis Sutherland. That's what it was. Louis Sutherland was supposed to make his UFC debut a couple weeks ago. So clearly, you know, the experience is there. His one draw is against the guy who's 20-12. We'll see how he does when he takes on Jovan Leka. Jovan Leka coming into this one, like I said, 23 years old. He's from Serbia. Of his 10 wins, 9 finishes. 5 of those in round one. He has 6 knockouts and 3 subs. He's never been finished of his 2 defeats. He currently rides a little 3-fight winning streak, trains out a family fight team. Last loss was in 2024 in May. His last fight was in July. Got a round 2 TKO over a guy who is 9-5. So decent stuff all around. These two are fairly similar. You know, there's not really much to pick at here. I'm going to go as simple as the fact that we have a guy who's 31. He's had 17 fights. He's had just over double the experience of Jovan Leka. I'm going to go with Azamat Nuftalev. But hey, you know what? Anything could happen. If you guys just look up pictures of these guys, I mean, it's not much to go off of, but it does give you just a bit glimpse of what they look like. Jovan's coming in, nice big tattoos. Azamat appears to just be, you know, big and built. So we'll see how this one goes down. But yeah, final heavyweight matchup of the season. Hopefully it will be another round one knockout. I'm going to go Azamat round one knockout. Plus, guys with the name Azamat tend to do pretty well in the UFC. Next up, featherweight division, as Marwan Freaky Rahiki takes on Anais Metal Malumba. Wow. Wow, I've just given up on these names. They are just incredibly goofy. Marwan is 6-0 undefeated. Anais is 9-2. Orthodox stands for Rahiki. Switch stands for Anais Mulumba. And coming to this one, Marwan Rahiki, 23 years of age. He is from Australia. And out of his 6 wins, 6 finishes, half of those in round number 1. He has 5 KOs and 1 submission. His last win came in July, where he actually successfully defended the Hex Championship, the Hex Fight Series Championship. So he has gone 4-0 in that promotion. He's also fought in Eternal MMA, had a decent amateur run, went 5-1, and after he lost in December of 2023, he transitioned to pro and has not looked back. He actually holds a round 4 guillotine choke, which does show he can go past the usual 3 rounds. So we'll see how he does in this one when he takes on Anais Mulumba, an Anais champion in his promotion. The 27-year-old is from the Dominican Republic, or maybe it says DR Congo. That's the Dominican Republic, I believe, or he's from the Congo of some sort, currently riding a 3-fight winning streak of his 9 wins, 9 finishes.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
4 KOs and 5 subs. Of his 2 defeats, he's been submitted once. His last win came in June, where he won on UAE Warriors, got a round 2 submission choke. His last defeat also in May of 2024, the same time for Joe Von Lekka, who we were just talking about. He's done all right, I will say. His one loss is to a guy with the best record he's fought in, 22-7. Last guy he beat was 10-11. Now, for Marwan, he also hasn't fought necessarily the best of competition, but his opponent's records, 6-1, 7-3, 6-8, 7-4, 2-1, 1-0. And that was going backwards from, you know, when they originally came around. So just off of that, you know, and just off of appearance, which appearances can be misleading, I think I'm going to go with Marwan Rahiki to get this one done by round 2 knockout. Marwan doesn't appear to start too strong, but then again, it seems like Anais does. So maybe this fight starts off pretty quick. Marwan is able to catch Anais, who's coming in. We'll see, but I do like Marwan a bit more in this one. I'll always take more Australians in the UFC, but if we could get someone from the Congo, that'd also be pretty good. So we are going to go with Marwan, but no bias here whatsoever. Sorry, Anais. I will say it would be cool to see Anais in the UFC, just because I've never seen a name like his, and I wonder if I'm even pronouncing it correctly. A-N-A-N-I-A-S. Anais? Anais? I don't know what his name is, but I'm going with the other guy, Marwan Rahiki. With that, we get into our fourth matchup of the evening, just over halfway through the card. Bantamweight is up next as Quan Pretty Boy Wonil takes on Juan Pegajoso Diaz. Like I told you guys, very fun names in this one. Quan Wonil, 14-5, interesting record. Juan Diaz, 14-1-1. Both men have naturally fought at bantamweight outside of the UFC, and they both stand in the orthodox fighting position. Coming into this one, man, Quan Wonil, if you didn't know, he fights out of one. He used to fight in one championship, went 9-5 over there. The 30-year-old from South Korea has 13 of his 14 wins by finish, 12 knockouts, and 1 sub. Of his 5 defeats, he's been submitted twice and knocked out twice. So this guy's only been the distance twice in his entire 19-fight career. He last lost in January, which was a title shot against the current champion, Fabricio de Andrade, who has actually beaten him another time before. So of his five defeats, they both came to the same guy, and he's knocked him out in both of those in just under a minute. 42 seconds he was knocked out in. So it is very rare you see someone coming in off of a loss, but hey, I guess Kwon Will-Nil is worthy of it. Before that, he had been on a three-fight winning streak, all by finish. And, you know, since 2020, this guy has gone 6-2, all of his wins finishes, his only two losses to Fabricio De Andrade. So I know for a fact his opponent, Juan Diniz, is definitely going to be studying the film on Fabricio to know how to beat Kwon Will-Nil. His opponent, Juan Diniz, born in Peru, now trains out of Mexico. The 27-year-old has 6 of his 14 wins by finish, 4 KOs and 2 subs. His last fight came in February, and he trains at Entram Gym. Not notable Mexicans train there, but I do find it interesting that 50% of this man's wins are by decision. So he's not necessarily a fighter. Last win was in February, a unanimous decision victory defending the Lux Fight Championship. Other than that, he had 2 grappling matchups on the same night in March 30th, won and lost by a submission in both of those. So tough to say what will come of this. I will say I do like the record more with Nick Diniz, or what's his name? Juan Diniz, but there's just some about Kwon Will-Nil, which is just speaking to me. I don't know what it is. And the last time we had some South Koreans on, they didn't necessarily perform the best. So this is an opportunity to bounce back, to show that one championship can produce some good contenders, as we kind of saw with Kai Sakura. He didn't do so well. So I am going to ride with South Koreans. I always tend to be a bit biased. I don't know what it is. I just like South Koreans for some reason. And Kwon Will-Nil, you have my pick. And with him having 13 of his 14 wins by finish, give me a round one knockout for Kwon Will-Nil. With that, we get into our co-main event, which I'm excited for because this man is back for the second time of the season in Freddie the Barbarian Fidel. Freddie is taking on baby monster Levi Rodriguez. 4-0 for Freddie, 5-0 for Levi Rodriguez. Both men stand in the orthodox fighting position, and this is super interesting. You rarely see this. You know, this is always a uncommon thing for a fighter to fight twice in a season. I don't even know how many times this has happened, but the 31-year-old from New York, who is actually a high school football coach, I'm pretty sure, or he's either a coach of a wrestling team, football team, something, trains at Matt Serra and Ray Longo gym. So Aljamain Sterling, Rob Dovashelli, they were rooting for him. And of his 4 wins, 3 finishes. Last time he was on episode 5, was a very lackluster win. Okay, beat Felipe Franco, who had been dominating him. You know, Felipe had won round 1, won round 2, and then round 3 came around. Both guys were so gassed. Like, this was a very boring fight. And then with 12 seconds left, Felipe just was way more gassed than Freddie. Freddie miraculously locked in a takedown. Mind you, he didn't even, not takedown, locked in a submission. He was taken down in this round and just happened to reverse it. Locks in a rear naked choke, gets it done, and Dana White said, you know what? You took the fight on short notice, which, by the way, he missed weight, unfortunately. So, you know, to be fair, really giving him another go here to make weight and perform. But, you know, he was like, give it another shot. Wish you the best of luck. And his opponent now, Levi Rodriguez. Similar record. He's 5-0. One more professional fight than him. He's 28 years old. From Brazil, 5 wins, 5 knockouts. So pretty simple game plan for Levi Rodriguez. The Brazilian last win came in September 5th, if you want to actually be specific, being that September wasn't too long ago, where he got a round 1 knockout clean over Alan Ribeiro on LFA. He's actually gone 3-0 in LFA in his career after turning pro in 2022. He's fought twice this year, both of them round one knockouts, but a round 1 knockout and a round 3, technically a TKO, but it was a shoulder injury. So we'll see how he does here. I feel like Levi Rodriguez is actually the better pick in this scenario, but it's kind of hard to go against the fun story of Freddie Vidal trying to get into the UFC. So I'm going to lean with him, going to go with Freddie Vidal. He does have to be careful, though. I will say Levi Rodriguez is going to come in hot, ready to take his head off with some knockouts. So Freddie, hang in there, land a takedown of your own, go for another submission. I think he's going to be a bit more submission hungry here now that he knows he can do it. There's always this thing with fighters where once they realize they can do something, like a certain knockout or submission, they always go for it. Like before Walter Walker was spamming heel hooks, he elected to knock out all his opponents. Once he learned that he could just spam heel hooks, it worked. Same thing for Iyo Topura. He had one knockout out of his first however many finishes that eventually, once he knocked out Jai Herbert, he kind of realized, wait a second, I can just knock guys out. He's been doing it ever since. So going to go with Freddie Vidal in this one, but Levi Rodriguez definitely has some potential to be a little tear shatter, if you will, for all of our Freddie Vidal fans. With that, we get into the final fight of season 10 on the season. You get Michael Oliveira. That's Charles Oliveira just fought, and now Michael Oliveira is main eventing a card. His nickname's PQD, and he takes on Victor Psicosis Valenzuela. That is a fun nickname. Michael 8-0 undefeated. Victor Valenzuela 12-3. Welterweight division, both men naturally fight at this weight, and they're both in the orthodox fighting position. Michael Oliveira, 27 years old, from Rio. Of his 8 wins, 7 knockouts. He went 6-0 in the LFA, and you know, didn't win a belt, but certainly impressed everyone with his skills. I'll say, you know, for Michael, his last win did come in November of 2024, so almost been a year since he last fought, but he does train at the KO squad. Some decent other fighters have performed there as well, and out of those 7 knockouts, 6 have came in round number 1, including 4. 4 of them have came in 90 seconds or less, 3 in less than a minute. So clearly he loves to put guys away. He's been fighting upwards, you know, debuted, taking out a 1-0 guy, then took on a 2-0 guy, 2-1, 3-2, 2-1, 4-1, 7-3. Last win over a guy who was 11-7-2. So clearly Michael Oliveira is talented, and we'll see how he does. He takes on the man who's 12-3, the man from Chile, Victor Valenzuela. Victor Valenzuela, 31 years old, is on a 6-fight winning streak. Of those 12 wins, he has 8 finishes, 6 knockouts, and 2 subs. Of his 3 defeats, he's been finished twice. Trains at MMA Masters, very notable gym. Colby Covington's trained there. Iyo Topura has trained there. You have seen a plethora of guys train there. Ricardo Lamas, Nate Landry, you know, you got a lot of good fighters that fought in the UFC have trained there. And his last win came in June, won actually the Fury FC Welterweight Championship, beating Bruce Whitehead. So, you know, last loss came in 2021. Both these guys are talented. They really are, and I don't know.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
What to expect. I'll say talent level, I am leaning a bit more towards Michael Oliveira, but at the same time, there's just something about our man here in Victor Valenzuela. He just appears to kind of have the look, the moxie, and if he trains at such a good gym as MMA Masters, I feel like he has to be pretty good to an extent. So in terms of going off of looks, I would go with Michael Oliveira, but going off of the gym he trains at and the fact that he's had more experience, I'm actually going to go with Victor Valenzuela here. I'm shocking myself to an extent. Going with Victor, I don't know, Victor's just screaming, pick me, upset, so that's what we're going to go with. But yeah, those are your predictions for Dana White's Contender Series 9.10, the season finale. And you know what? It's looking good. I feel like it's going to be a good finale. I feel like we're going to get a lot of good finishes. And especially knowing how crazy this season's been, it's been maybe the best season I've ever witnessed. I know the Fighters are going to pull out and really try and deliver their best for us. So with that, that will be enough of the Dana White's Contender Series portion of the episode, but now we have to do a little recap of fantasy football performances and current standings of NFL teams, because one thing you should all know is when you bet on an anytime touchdown score, and you bet on a quarterback, you're betting on them to either catch a pass or run the ball. And I thought it was just a throw a pass, so I'm putting money on Matthew Stafford. I'm putting money on, Trevor Lawrence. I'm putting money on Cooper Rush. That was a mistake. But Matthew Stafford and Trevor Lawrence, I'm like, oh, this is a lock. And then I'm like, wait a second, I thought they hit their bets. No, Zachary, no. They have to run the ball. And so that's just something you should know for the future. But as of right now, we've had a good amount of games, and I've only predicted one of these, maybe two of these, incorrectly. I've been doing fantastic on picks so far. Actually, let's check out my weekly picks real quick, because on the year I'm 60-29. For the week, we are 9-3. So I predicted the Eagles game wrong, Jaguars game, and I assume the 49ers game. Yes, but three games left. We still have 12 more to talk about. So without further ado, here's your week 6 NFL recap minus Sunday Night Football and Monday Night Football. Kicking off the week, we were in an NFC showdown between the Giants and Eagles on Thursday Night Football. And let me just say, Jackson Dart and Cam Scadabo are them. They are them. They are those guys. I mean, holy cow. What a performance in the 34-17 upset of the Eagles. Are we watching a full-out collapse of the Eagles? It's slowly starting to feel that way. Eagles are now 4-2. They've dropped their last two games, and as for the Giants in the Jackson Dart era, they picked up their only two wins of the season, and you can thank Cam Scadabo for his 31-point fantasy performance. Insane. Jackson Dart had 23. Wandell Robinson, 20. For the Eagles, 26 from Dallas Goedert, 20 from Jalen Hurts, and 14 from A.J. Brown. But Scadabo nabbed a touchdown in the second, nabbed one in the third, and nabbed one in the fourth. Eagles couldn't score a single thing in the second half. Jalen Hurts, 283 yards through the air, a touchdown and a pick, had 13 yards and a touchdown on the ground. Saquon Barkley held to 58 yards on 12 rushes. Dallas Goedert, 9 catches, 110 yards, a touchdown, was the stud wide receiver for the day. A.J. Brown, 6 catches, 80 yards. And Devontae Smith, 4 catches, 49. Come on, Jalen, pass to Devontae. He would have. There was actually a lot of opportunities for Devontae Smith. I can't lie. Jalen Hurts was just overthrowing left, right, and center. For the Giants, Jackson Dart, 195 yards and a touchdown through the air. On the ground, 13 rushes, 58 yards, and a touchdown. Scadabo on 19 rushes, 98 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Wandale, 6 catches, 84 yards, and a touchdown. And little Jordan Humphrey, 4 catches, 55 yards. Good for you. But yeah, don't blink. Giants are 2-4. They're, you know, still last in the NFC East, but I sense good things in their future. Eagles 4-2 are still, you know, tied for, you know, second best team in the league. But I don't know how they're going to do. I don't know how they're going to rebound. They need to figure something out because Jackson Dart and Cam Scadabo are cooking, and it doesn't look like they're stopping anytime soon. After that, we got into a little AFC showdown in London as the Broncos and Jets went to battle at 8:30 in the morning, and the Jets lose again. They are officially the worst team in the league. They're 0-6, okay? 6 games lost to open the year, and this one was just abysmal from them. They couldn't even get a touchdown to save their lives. For the Broncos, wasn't pretty at all. Wasn't a good win at all, but they've won 3 straight. They're tied for the best team in the AFC West, and you know what? That has to count for something. Denver D, 17 points. Bo Nix had 13. For the Jets, Nick Folk had 12, and the Jets defense had 10. Going through the entire game, I mean, we open it field goal, field goal, field goal. Broncos touchdown to end the first quarter. No scoring in the second. In the third, you have a Jets field goal and a end zone safety from offensive holding, which gave the Jets 2 points. Then, with 5 minutes left, the Broncos would seal the deal with a big kick from Will Lutz, and then Justin Fields couldn't march down the field to save his life. For the Broncos, Bo Nix, 174 yards and a touchdown. J.K. Dobbins, 14 rushes, only 40 yards. Evan Engram, 5 catches, 42 yards, and the lone touchdown went to Nate Adkins, who caught a little 16-yard pass on one of his 2 catches for the day. Justin Fields, 9-17, 47 yards. Breece Hall, 22 rushes, 59 yards. Josh Reynolds had 3 catches for 25 yards. I mean, I don't even know. Garrett Wilson got hurt. This Jets team is awful. I don't know if they can win a game the rest of the year. And certainly after this performance, they have 0 momentum. After that, we got into our noon games, and we opened with the Steelers and the Browns. And the Steelers, 3 straight wins, 4-1, beating a 1-5 Browns team. You know what? It pays to be good. That's what I'll say. In the defense, Defense was killer in this game, holding the Browns to 3 field goals. Dylan Gabriel couldn't do anything. The only real standout player for the game was Fannin Jr., rookie tight end. He had 15 fantasy points, and the kicker Schmitz had 11. For the Steelers, DK Metcalf, 19.5, A-Rod, 17.5, and Chris Boswell, 14 points. Yeah, Boswell was absolutely killing it. He hit 4 field goals. I mean, was just doing a phenomenal job. Dylan Gabriel, 221 yards, 29 of 52. So he was throwing. He just had no one to really catch the ball. Fannin Jr. had 7 catches for 81 yards. Jerry Jeudy, 5 catches, 43 yards. David Njoku, 3 catches, 28. Like, not much going on whatsoever. For Pittsburgh, A-Rod, 235 yards and 2 tutties, was looking great. As far as the running game goes, not much, but the Browns have a really good defensive line. Jalen Warren, 11 rushes, 52 yards. For receiving, Kenneth Gainwell, 6 catches, 14 yards. That's where he got all his fantasy points at. DK, 4 catches, 95 yards, including the big 25-yarder. Other touchdown went to Cam Hayward. That's right, Cam Hayward only had 1 catch for the game, and it was that touchdown. So, good job to the Steelers. They are now still the team on top in the AFC North, and after how good this division used to be, it's looking like the Steelers are going to run away with it this year. So, Steelers to the playoffs, what a shocker. Next up, Chargers and Dolphins in such a good high-level game. At the end of the day, though, it is the Chargers that pull away, and the Chargers, best team in the AFC West right now, 4-2, plus 2-point differential. Good work. Good work. So, for the Dolphins, not so good at work. 1-5, 2-game losing streak, and this was a rough game from Tua Tagovailoa for sure. Now, Devin Achane, amazing game, 31 fantasy points. Jalen Waddle had 15.8. For the Chargers, Ladd McConkey, 23. The backup, I think it is, or even if he's the third string, I don't know what he is, but Amari Hampton was out, and Kamani Vidal was in, and he killed it. He had 22 fantasy points, and Jay Herbert, 18.76. Game was close the entire way, but a 33-yarder from Cameron Dicker with 5 seconds left sealed the deal. Now, mind you, the Dolphins nabbed a touchdown with 46 seconds left. It looked like it was over, but no, they couldn't get it done. Herbert, 264 yards and 2 touchdowns. Vidal, 124 yards on the ground. And Ladd McConkey, 7 catches, 100 yards and a touchdown with Quentin Johnson nursing a injury. Keenan Allen, 4 catches, 27 yards, was kind of locked up the entire game. Nothing was going well for him. For the Dolphins, Tua, 205 yards, touchdown, 3 picks. Yikes. But Achane stole the show. 4 catches, 22 yards, 16 rushes for 128 yards, and 2 touchdowns. And he had an insane 49-yard rush in the first quarter. It really, really lit everyone up. And even your boy Darren Waller caught another touchdown. 3 games, 4 touchdowns. You know what? He's been the bright spot for a rather awful Dolphins team. So Chargers, their record's 4-2. Pretty stellar. The Dolphins, you know what? They'd easily be the worst team in their division to have the Jets not been able to get a win to save their lives. Next up, Patriots and Saints. And Patriots sneak away with one in New Orleans, 25-19. You could say they survived the Saints, because honestly, it looked like they...
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
They were going to lose, but 3 straight wins, plus 30-point differential, 3-0 on the road, 4-2 record. Drake May, 27 fantasy points, but nothing to complain about at all for the Patriots. And all the points in this game were scored in the first half. I mean, heading into the second quarter, it was 22-16, and then we had a field goal from the Patriots in the third, a field goal from the Saints in the fourth, so defenses came up big in the second half. In terms of other big fantasy performances, Boutte, wide receiver for the Pats, had 26, DeMario Douglas had 16, For the Saints, 16 for their kicker, 15 for Olave, 12 for Kamara. I mean, you know, we know the Saints aren't good at all. Drake May, 261 yards, 3 tutties. He's a beauty. He also had the most rushing yards for the game with 28. Ramondre Stevenson, 13 rushes, only 18 yards. Rough. But yeah, for Kendrick Boutte, 5 catches, 93 yards and 2 tutties. He was a stud. Diggs, only 3 catches for 28 yards. Kind of selling in fantasy. Can't even lie. For the Saints, Spencer Rattler, 20 for 26 for 227 yards. Mid. I mean, couldn't even get done. The lone touchdown for the rushing game was a... Actually, lone touchdown for the game for the Saints team was a Taysom Hill run. Huh. How about that? Yeah. Other than that, Olave, 6 catches, 98 yards, as he should be, because Olave is clearly the best wide receiver on the team. So Patriots 4-2 are now second in the AFC East, but are one of the better teams in the league. As for the Saints, they are 1-5 and are in the bottom of the barrel. But you know what? They're playing teams close, so that's count for something. Talk about playing teams close. The Ravens and Rams was close for the entire first half. Field goal for Tyler Lupin, a field goal for Joshua Cardi, had it 3-3 heading into the second half before 2 third quarter touchdowns from the Rams sealed the deal 17-3. The Ravens look lost out there. The Ravens look awful out there. Awful, I think, is a generous word, if you ask me. Kyren had 16. Rams defense had 16. Tyler Higbee had 14. Nothing impressive. The only good performance for the Ravens was 14 points from Derrick Henry. Other than that, nothing else whatsoever. For the Rams, Stafford, 181 yards, a touchdown. This Ravens defense really played hard. This Ravens defense was the MVPs for the Ravens team, but I mean, offense just couldn't make up for it. Kyren Williams, 50 rushing yards, 1 tutty. He got done. Higbee, 4 catches, 40 yards, a tutty. Davante Adams, 4 catches, 39 yards. And Puka, 2 catches for 28 yards and gets injured before halftime. Not good whatsoever. For the Ravens, Cooper Rush, 72 yards and a pick. Huntley comes in and literally in, I kid you not, one drive did a better performance than Cooper Rush was doing the whole game. Cooper Rush is definitely getting benched next week. Derrick Henry, 24 rushes, 122 yards. Zay Flowers, 6 catches, 46 yards. I mean, there's nothing nice to really say about this Ravens team. They are really bad. They are 1-5, 4 straight losses, and they need Lamar Jackson back if they even want to, you know, end the year on a good beat. But Steelers are going to run away with the AFC North. Now, as for the NFC West, Rams currently tied with the Seahawks and 49ers. They're all 4-2. They are all playing extremely well ball. We'll talk about the Seahawks in just a second, as we have to talk about one of the best games of the week, the Colts and the Cardinals. Colts steal the win 31-27. Man, Jacoby Brissett played his heart out, but just couldn't get it done. You really can't. This Colts team is the best team in the league. Colts are 5-1, 2 straight wins, and they're just absolutely playing amazing football. 23 points from Jonathan Taylor, 22 from Daniel Jones, and 18 from the rookie, Tyler Warren, who is this season's Brock Bowers, Sam Laporta. He's the best tight end of this season, best rookie tight end, I should say. For the Cardinals, 21 fantasy points for Trey McBride, 20 from Jacoby Brissett, and almost 13 for Zay Jones. But this was back and forth, and it looked like the Cardinals defense was really going to stand tall, but Jonathan Taylor scores just 4.5 minutes left, and the Colts D ends the game, forcing a turnover, and yeah, they walk away victorious. But Jacoby Brissett, 320 yards, 2 touchdowns at pick, he did great. Bam Knight, 34 yards at touchdown, took over after DeMarcado got injured. Michael Carter was kind of on the back burner, so Bam Knight might be taking over backfield duties, but three best wide receivers, Greg Dortch, caught a touchdown. Marvin Harrison really had an off game. Trey McBride, 8 catches, 72 yards, and a touchdown, was killing it. And Zay Jones, 5 catches, 79 yards. You know, Jacoby Brissett liked throwing to him. For Daniel Jones, 212 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a pick, but he makes up for it with a touchdown run. Jonathan Taylor, 123 yards, a touchdown. What more would you expect? Warren and Downs both go for 6 catches, right around 60 yards, and they both get a touchdown. So, good job to this Colts team getting it done. They are very, very talented, 5-1, firing on all cylinders. As for the Cardinals, 2-4, 4 straight losses. They just can't end a game. to save their lives. Quarters one through three, they can do well. But can they end the game? Not at all. Absolutely awful performances in the fourth quarter. Next up, like I said, Seahawks win 20-12 over the Jaguars, which, you know, caught me off guard. I really thought this Jaguars team was better than this, but this Seahawks team, I feel like, is going to shock people all year. They're 4-2, part of the three best teams in the NFC West, and when Jaxon Smith-Njigba goes for 30 fantasy points, you're going to get it done. Sam Darnold also had 12, and Cooper Kupp had himself a little 12-point fantasy performance. And Jigba started the second quarter off with a massive 61-yard touchdown. He had himself a career day, 8 catches, 162 yards, and a touchdown behind Sam Darnold's 295-yard, 2-touchdown game. And then Cooper Kupp had 2 catches, one of which was for a touchdown. But I do want to highlight one more player here, Brian Thomas Jr., finally having himself a good game. 8 catches, 90 yards, and a touchdown, including a very, very much needed 21-yarder in the first quarter. T-Law, 258 yards and 2 touchdowns, looked much better than he has for the past few weeks, and I think that the Jaguars are finally going to start finding their footing as the season commences or begins to roll along. But 4-2, still the second best team in the AFC South, and they're leagues ahead of the Texans and Titans. So I don't think they need to worry. I think they just need to focus on games, string them together, and continue to walk away victorious. But this game belongs to the Seahawks, as the NFC West is quickly becoming the best division in the league today. Then my favorite upset pick of the week, the Panthers over the Cowboys. Back-to-back weeks where I have officially highlighted who my upset pick is, and they have successfully done what they needed to do. 30-27, Ryan Fitzgerald nails a 33-yarder as time expires to put the Panthers ahead. Amazing work. This Panthers team is far better than it has been in the past seasons. I can say that confidently. As for the Cowboys, man, they played hard, but the Panthers clearly wanted this game more. I mean, back and forth the entire way. We went field goal for field goal, touchdown for touchdown for touchdown in the second quarter. Third quarter, match touchdowns. When the Panthers got a touchdown, there was the match with a touchdown. I mean, this was a fantastic game. This might actually be game of the week, if you ask me. George Pickens went for 31.8, and Rico Dowdle, 33.9. Insane stuff from the Panthers running back. Bryce Young, 18 fantasy points. Dak Prescott had 22. And Torrey McMillan, 17.9, had himself a nice little game. For Dallas, Dak goes for 206 yards and 3 touchdowns. But the real key here is that Javonte Williams was held to only 29 yards on 13 rushes. For receiving-wise, George Pickens, 9 catches, 168 yards, and a touchdown. Jake Ferguson, 3 catches, 33 yards, and touchdown for him. Other than that, it's pretty much just the Pickens and Prescott show, because Panthers, they were using everyone. They really were. And, you know, Dowdle, 30 rushes, 183 yards, also had a touchdown and 56 yards to the air. He was killing it. Torrey McMillan, of his 3 catches, 2 of them were touchdowns. Trevor Etienne was getting catches. Tommy Tremble's making big plays. Terry Horn Jr. was doing good stuff. And Xavier Leggett got like one catch. It almost got a touchdown. He really did. But yeah, Panthers walking away with the victory. They're sitting here at 3-3. Two straight games, they're 3-0 at home, 0-3 on the road, so we'll see if they can win on the road this year. But at home, they appear to know what they want. As for the Cowboys, 2-3-1, they have a goofy record, and I never know if they're going to win or lose this whole year. I really don't. Cowboys are going to be unpredictable, but this Panthers team, if they play like this every week, they will have great success. Moving into our 3-3-30 games, Raiders and Titans. I mean, this further just shows how bad the Titans are, because this was such a winnable game. I mean, the Raiders were just not on point. They were just not firing like they sometimes do. It was 17-3 with 3 minutes left, and the Titans just couldn't score to save their lives. They're able to nail a touchdown with 3 minutes left, but other than that, they just couldn't do anything. Van Jefferson, 11 fantasy points, leads the team for the Titans. For the Raiders, 17 points from their defense. Great defensive performance from this Raiders team. Ashton Jeanty, 16.6, and Michael Mayer, 16 fantasy points. Jeanty punched in a touchdown in the third. Michael Mayer caught one in the second, and yeah, Raiders get this one done, as they should. Like, this should be something you pat yourself on the back. This should be, we did what we needed to, as expected. Raiders are 2-4, still the worst team in the AFC West, but they have 2 wins.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. what's in your wallet.
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
So, you know, this is where you build momentum. And the Titans being 1-5, having only scored 83 points on the year, they, thankfully for the Jets, you know, not having to win yet, are not the worst team in the league. But the second the Jets get a victory, them and the Browns are going to be at the bottom of the barrel for two worst teams. Cam Ward, 222 yards, one touchdown, one pick. Van Jefferson, four catches, 75 yards. Like, come on, man. Like, I don't know what to tell you. I will say it was insane as we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 different players catch a pass in this game. And on 15 rushing attempts, only 65 yards between Pollard and Tachi Spears. This Titans team, I have no good advice. You guys are just awful. For the Raiders, Ashton Jeanty, 23 rushes, 75 yards, and a touchdown. Also had two catches for 11 yards. Geno Smith, 175 yards, touchdown, and a very bad pick. I mean, this guy is just, you know, a pick master. He really is. I do want to highlight a fun little stat line here. Raheem Mostert, 5 rushes, negative 4 yards. So, just kind of funny. Top two wide receivers, Trey Tucker, 5 catches, 70 yards, and Michael Mayer, 5 catches, 50 yards, and got the lone touchdown for the wide receiver core. But yeah, Raiders get it done as they should. The Titans are so bad. So bad. And I'll tell you what else is bad, and that was the 49ers and Buccaneers. And not bad in the sense of a game, no. Bad in the sense of the 49ers couldn't get a first down to save their lives when they needed to. I mean, Christian McCaffrey, 24 fantasy points, amazing. Kendrick Bourne, 19. Eddie Pinheiro, the kicker, 18. For the Bucs, Baker, 19. Rashid White, 17. And Kay Johnson had 16. I don't even know who Kay Johnson is. Cameron Johnson, huh? He's killing it. Caught a 34-yard pass. Good for him. But yeah, Buccaneers walk away with the victory, and they are looking very stellar. But I want to take away from this game is that the 49ers just, they looked out of shape by the time the fourth quarter came around. I don't know what it was, but they just looked gassed for some reason. So they're 4-2, still the best team in the NFC West, but they're technically tied with the Seahawks and Rams as they all have the same record. For the Bucs, 5-1, they're the best team in the NFC right now. You know, if the Lions win, they'll be better. But as of right now, the Bucs, 5-1, tied for best team in the league as well. Mac Jones, 347 yards and two picks. Was making a lot of passes, but I mean, just couldn't get in the end zone. McCaffrey, 54 yards and a touchdown. Also had 7 catches for 57 yards. And Kendrick Bourne, 5 catches, 142 yards. Now, for the Bucs, Baker, 256 yards, only 6 incompletions and 2 touchdowns. Rashad White, touchdown. Sean Tucker on the ground, touchdown. And yeah, nothing much more to say. Buccaneers get it done 30-19. Good work for them. And they're a team to watch out for this year as Baker is putting on MVP numbers. As of right now, through week 6, I think he's everyone's lead for MVP of the league. I do think that the 49ers just need to have, Juwan Johnson back and healthy. They need George Kittle back. They need Brock Purdy. They are a banged up team. So get all your players back and they're going to be the regular 49ers we will recognize. Very close game and the biggest favorite and underdog matchup here. Packers came in plus, Bengals were plus 800. Packers were minus 1600. But Bengals give them a run for their money. 18-27, the Packers walk away victorious. They'll improve to 3-1-1 and improve to 3-0 at home as well. For the Bengals, they will move to 2-4 and are, you know, rough. 4 straight losses, but Joe Flacco didn't look too bad here. Joe Flacco went for 18 fantasy points. Jamar Chase, 25. T. Higgins had 11. For the Packers, Josh Jacobs, 32. Guy's an absolute monster. Jordan Love had 14. Matthew Golden had 13. But yeah, I mean, just a monster game from Josh Jacobs. Dude punched in 2 touchdowns on 93 yards and had 5 catches for 57 yards. Matthew Golden, 3 catches, 86 yards, had himself a decent game. And Tucker Kraft, 2 catches, 43 yards, and a touchdown. Jamar Chase, 10 catches, 94 yards, and a touchdown. Was looking really good as Joe Flacco, 219 yards, 2 touchdowns. Didn't throw a turnover. Good for you. But yeah, Bengals still struggling without Joe Burrow. I don't know if they're ever going to turn things around. Hopefully they can. But all I got to say is that the Packers, they're going to be some tough teams. They're going to be a tough team to beat for my Minnesota Vikings this year. So fingers crossed they can get it done. But yeah, that's your little week 6 recap. Still have have three more games left. You got Lions and Chiefs currently going at it. And then, of course, Falcons and Bills. That one's going to be good. I'm very interested to see what happens in that one, though, seeing if Bijan Robinson tears up the line. But Bills should pick apart the Falcons. Then you have Bears and Commanders, which I think has a good potential to see a Bears win in a little sneaky underdog spot. We'll have to see. But, you know, we can always talk about all that on our Week 7 predictions coming up later in the week. But we do have to talk about a little WWE before we get into UFC Rio, as WWE Crown Jewel went on this past weekend, and we had some very good matches, some very mediocre matches, and you know what? For being a filler event, there was some storylines here, which I can see being forwarded. So without further ado, here's a little recap of WWE Crown Jewel 2025 in Perth, Western Australia. For starters, easily one of the best parts about this event I saw was the crowd here. The Perth, Australia crowd was fantastic. It just speaks to the just common knowledge among wrestling fans, and that is international crowds always are better than American crowds. I almost have never seen an American crowd that has done anything remotely close to a Australian, dare I say European crowd for sure. But we opened the event with Bronson Reed and Roman Reigns in an Australian street fight. It went 21 minutes, and the entire sentiment really was this was just pretty mediocre. You had your Bron Breakker interference. You had your Usos interference. You had Roman Reigns using, you know, a rugby ball. I think it was like a cricket bat or something. There was some cool spots. There was a moment where Roman Reigns was picked up by Bronson Reed and was going to be kind of like Samoan dropped. And then Bronson Reed loses Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns then pushes himself off. And then as Jey Uso gets in to spear Bronson Reed moves and he hits Roman Reigns. You start to see this kind of split again with the Usos and Roman Reigns, and Roman Reigns is like, you guys interfered and it didn't work. I don't want to see y'all till Christmas. And I figure this is kind of the start of the Jey Uso, I don't even know if it's like a heel turn, but maybe a more aggressive side to Jey Uso. Certainly him and Jimmy appear to be going separate ways, but this was really good giving Bronson Reed the win. Some people were upset that Bronson Reed won this, but I think it's perfect because if he had lost again, it really would have buried him, and now he'll win over Roman Reigns. Since 2020, there have only been two men to pin Roman Reigns, the Tribal Chief, in one-on-one combat. It's Cody Rhodes, of course, at WrestleMania 40, and now Bronson Reed. So Bronson Reed looks very dominant. I think him and Bron Breakker should go after the tag team titles as soon as this upcoming episode of Monday Night Raw. And as for Roman Reigns, he can disappear until War Games when he comes back to be on the good guys team. But I think this was a bit slower than people were expecting. Not as, you know, intense or whatever. So nonetheless, the crowd was into it, and you know what? It wasn't bad. So we'll see where all the storylines go, but this storyline they're doing with just the Bronze and the Usos is just dragging out far too long. Maybe this is the end, but I somewhat doubt it. Second matchup of the night, and it was by far the shortest by a long metric. Only 10 minutes for Stephanie Vaquer and Tiffany Stratton in a singles match for the WWE Women's Crown Jewel Championship. And funny enough, I didn't even know this. This was Tiffany Stratton's first loss before she had been champion, which I think is insane. And Steffi Vaquer beat her here clean. Tiffany Stratton goes to do her backflip finisher. She missed. Then Steffi Vaquer gets on top. She does her little corkscrew spin finish off the top. Gets the 1-2-3 and is your 2025 Women's Crown Jewel Championship. What if I were to tell you guys that Steffi Vaquer came into WWE on NXT in 2025? Like, she debuted in NXT this year. She won the NXT North American Championship. She won the NXT Championship. She would come into WWE. She would then win the Women's World Championship, and then she would win the Crown Jewel Championship, essentially meaning she's the better of the two champions in the UFC, and it's only halfway through October. I mean, maybe the best rookie year I've ever seen. It is incredible. And yeah, this didn't go as long. You know, it did feel a bit rushed, but I mean, it was an exhibition match at the end of the day. These two probably aren't going to cross paths for a while. I'm sure they'll come up with feuds for them on Raw and SmackDown respectively, but hey, decent match overall. People want it to be a bit longer, but after here, the show went all cylinders firing, as next up, John Cena and AJ Styles, 27 minutes of pure wrestling. I mean, this is up there with the Cody Rhodes SummerSlam matchup. This may be better. I don't know. I really love the SummerSlam matchup, but this match was insane from the get-go. from the get-go, you have John Cena giving the ring announcer a special introduction for AJ Styles. And AJ Styles comes out in his old-school TNA gear, his old-school entrance. John Cena comes out and the crowd goes ballistic. He's literally grabbing the camera and filming the crowd. And these two just give us all the hits. They're giving us their finishers. You're then having the Walls of Jericho. You're having Bray Wyatt tributes with Sister Abigail. You're having the Miz skull-crushing finale. You're having RKO's tombstones. You are having sweet chin music. You are having rock bottom. This was insane. This is one of the greatest wrestling matches I've ever seen. I didn't even watch it fully. I went through and watched a bunch of highlights. I saw all the best moments from it, and I think I might go back and rewatch this once I have ESPN, the premium version or something, because this was fantastic. 5 stars, if you ask me. And man, I just really hope they give AJ Styles something. There's a lot of rumors he's retiring coming up in early 2026. So if they could give him one last good run, I would really appreciate it. But John Cena here looked fantastic. When he did the Sister Abigail, the crowd went nuts. And then they were all waving their sticks in the air, their flashlights with lights on. I mean, it was fantastic. And the finishing sequence, John Cena lifts him up for the AA, switches it into the Tombstone Piledriver, then rolls him back up, hits an AA, gets the pin. They hug it out afterwards, and as John Cena is walking up the ramp, he flips the 4 in the air. That's right, only 4 more John Cena appearances. 2 Monday Night Raws in November, I believe. He then has an appearance at Survivor Series, and then, of course, his final match on December 13th. So, crazy stuff all around, but this matchup was amazing. This matchup is one that I have to go back and re-watch. If you're a wrestling fan, you will definitely love this match. But I only saw all the highlights. Like, they put together a lot of good highlight packages of this, and I'm sure watching it live was just a whole different ballgame. So John Cena, AJ Styles, easily up there for maybe the best matchup of the night. In my opinion, it was, but the main event was also pretty good. But before the main event, we had a 20-minute showdown between Io Sky and Rhea Ripley and the Kabuki Warriors, and they went with Rhea Ripley. They went with the good team. They went with the baby faces in this situation. And the one thing I will say is, like, obviously watching Rhea Ripley win in her home country town of Perth, Western Australia, is very good, but it also, you know, the Kabuki Warriors don't look strong here. Asuka and Kairi Sane, like, they were supposed to maybe be the team for Survivor Series War Games. I'm starting to think now they might not be, because, I mean, at the end of the day, I feel like their feud should be done here. If anything, Kairi Sane and Asuka have their own feud, and I'd maybe want to see Rhea Ripley and Io Sky go after the women's tag team belts, like, if I'm being all honest in this situation here. But, I mean, it was a fine matchup. The crowd probably made this way better than the actual match was. But, yeah, so the spot I had to be in, you know, coming after John Cena and AJ Styles, it was decent. It did what it had to. I think I'm just, you know, kind of wondering what WWE's going to do here, because the Kabuki Warriors don't look strong at all. So I don't know if they're just going to have Raw segments the rest of the way until Survivor Series War Games. We'll have to see. But good job to Io Sky and Rhea Ripley. Them as a tag team is super fun. And if they want to go after the tag team belts, I think that will work very well. But after that, we got into the main event, and it was 20 seconds under 30 minutes as Seth Rollins defeats Cody Rhodes clean to an extent without any outside interference. That is right. Seth Rollins beats Cody Rhodes in another 5-star classic. This and AJ Styles and John Cena are runners for 2 of the best matchups of the year. And this whole event as a whole, nothing to really complain about. Really, there isn't. This was such a step up from WrestlePalooza. I think Triple H listened to the fans to an extent, because this was a much better product, especially for being in person for this. I'm sure people got their money's worth a lot. And I mean, for this contest, you saw Seth Rollins doing a diving headbutt off the top rope to Cody Rhodes across the ring. You had a rock bottom, into a flipping enziguri off the top rope. You had Cody Rhodes hitting a super crossroads off the top rope, which, by the way, I'm almost sad he used that here and Seth Rollins kicked out, because, I mean, that would have been really good as a finish in another matchup he would have coming. But Seth Rollins kicks out of everything. I mean, there was one crazy moment. I actually am very sad Cody Rhodes kicked out of this too, but you had a pedigree into a stomp. You also had a super stomp off the top rope. But then today, the finish came when a watch that Cody Rhodes had gifted Seth Rollins, it was somehow at ringside for some reason, and Seth Rollins grabs it, hits Cody Rhodes with it, which I didn't realize when you get hit with a gold watch, and if you get punched with it, you immediately get knocked out unconscious. I think that is pretty funny logic right there. And Seth Rollins hits a stomp, and it was game over. So Seth Rollins ends the pay-per-view as the TPLE, I should say, as the top dog. And you know what? I got nothing else to say. I mean, impressive work from Seth Rollins. He is clearly, you know, that he needed this win much more than Cody Rhodes. And I assume they're just going to go back to him versus CM Punk for now. As for Cody Rhodes, they'll find a villain for him. I hope we really start to progress into Randy Orton versus Cody Rhodes, but we'll have to see. I think it was a really great PLE overall. I'm excited to see what they bring to us next at Survivor Series War Games, but yeah, Crown Jewel 2025, two thumbs up from me. I'm a little sad I didn't get to watch it, but there's no real way I could have watched it because I don't have the ESPN Plus premium version, whatever it is. So I know people say use a VPN with Netflix, but I don't have Netflix either. I don't have anything. I don't even know how I watch anything. Actually, I have ESPN Plus, the regular version, so I can watch UFC, which is what we're about to talk about right now with our official recap of UFC Rio. I'm going to go out and say this. I think this was the best fight night of the year. I really think it was. This Brazilian crowd was 10 out of 10 out of our 12 fights. Only three went the distance. I hate to say it. They were the third fight on the main card and the co-main. But other than that, amazing work top to bottom from the fighters. We have a lot to unpack. So here's your official recap of UFC Rio and what is going to be next for each and every one of the fighters. Opening up the card, we were in the men's bantamweight division, and Luan Lacerda taking on Salmon Oliveira. And might I say, Salmon Oliveira is so bad. I have no idea how this guy got along as long as he did in the UFC. He will end his UFC run. He is on the cut counter with a 0-4 record. 0-4, he lost in 2022, lost in 2023, and has been finished twice this year. This one not looking any better than the rest. But I will say Luan Lacerda, great win for him. His first UFC win, and it was an impressive arm bar. 24 significant strikes to 21. This was done in the grappling realm. Round one, 2 of 2, 3 minutes, 38 seconds of control time. Luan Lacerda was dominating him there. Round two, he landed a takedown as well, controlling 2.5 minutes of the round before eventually landing in a armbar as Salmon Oliveira went to reverse the ground position, and he tapped promptly, and that was that. And to make matters better for Luan Lacerda, this will mark his 11th career submission. Good for him. Good stuff for Luan Lacerda, remaining in the UFC. He was the favorite, and it showed here. It really did. He looked an edge better than Salmon Oliveira, and Salmon Oliveira came in heavy as well. I am so glad to be done with Salmon Oliveira. He's being cut. Go to the independent scene. You have no part here in the UFC. But as for Luan Lacerda, bantamweight division will have you. We will. Who will he take on? It's tough to say. It really is. He could take on a number of guys, but being that he's coming in off a win, maybe it'd be nice to test him against someone like Adrian Yanez. Christian Quiñones and Adrian Yanez are doing battle. The winner of that could definitely be an opponent. You also have Diego Marcos and Felipe Lima doing battle. Maybe the loser of that could be who he fights next. But Luan Lacerda getting it done here, looking good as he was doing it. Good job to you, young man, as you will now pick up your first UFC win, and hopefully some more, as he is 32, so now is the time you'd really need to dial it up if you want to make a run. Next up, women's strawweight division, and we also get our first performance of the night, and you already know this lady's going to the rankings after a performance like this. Julia Pollastri fighting with urgency, 137 significant strikes to 72, leading to the round three TKO, her fifth career win by knockout. I mean, Charlie Kowalski had nothing going for her, was able to land a takedown in round two for 30 seconds of control time. Other than that, she was just running the whole fight. I'm actually impressed she made it to round three with 2 minutes left. I really am, because Julia was just nonstop throwing haymakers at her, and I don't know where this Julia Pollastri has been through her first four fights of the UFC, but now I can see why the UFC has given her a shot. She looked good here. She looked like a minus 400 favorite. And for Carolina, this is kind of tough, as this is only the fourth time she's been finished in her career, but she has lost her last three. She is approaching 40 years old in just about 2 days, so I think this is the time for her to leave the UFC. She had a good run, though, and I was able to pick up a good amount of wins, fought for a championship, but yeah, her time here has since come to an end. As for Julia Pollastri, I mean, you know, we got Denise Gomez, Lexa Thanera, Tisha Penton, Angela Hill. You got a lot of women in the bottom of the top 15. So maybe they give her a little, like, pick-me-up fight in terms of women's strawweight action. You know, there's always someone like a, I don't know, is Deanna Belbita still in the UFC? Who did she? What about Deanna Barbosa? Deanna Barbosa just lost to Karine Silva. She's done, you know, about the similar, you know, 2-2 in the UFC. How about that? Deanna Barbosa, I think her nickname's The Witch. So if you want to go do her dirty, Julia Pilastri, be my guest. But great round 3 TKO for Julia Pilastri. Excellent work. Next up, Lucas Rocha dominates Stuart Nicole to unanimous decision in the flyweight division. And if anything, I'm impressed that Stuart survived until the end post, because Lucas Rocha looked like a man on a mission. 115 significant strikes of 45. He defends 18 takedown attempts from Stuart Nicole. Stuart Nicole goes round 1, 2 of 12. Round 2, 0 for 4. And round 3, 0 for 4. And only gets 90 seconds of control time for the entire fight. Lucas Rocha looking phenomenal in round 3, 60 significant strikes to 10. He was throwing freaking spinning wheel kicks. He was throwing crazy stuff. We saw a rolling thunder attempt from Stuart Nicole. I mean, Stuart Nicole is just doing anything he could, but man, Lucas Rocha looked impressive here. Attempted 244 total strikes. He'll improve to 18-2 and picks up his first UFC win. He's 1-1, and you know what? What a better way to end the year than with a big win. As for Stuart Nicole, he's 0-2 in the UFC. They're probably going to give him one more shot. I'd like to see him take on Clayton Carpenter next. You know, I think that might be a next option for Stuart Nicole. So how about him versus Clayton Carpenter? And as for Lucas Rocha, I mean, I think he should take on Rafael Filho. You know, I'm matchmaking on the same card. It works super easy. Once I get to that fight we're going to talk about, I can just run it back to these two. So might as well matchmake on the same card. I think it makes sense. Then, next up, women's bantamweight division, and we finally have another women's bantamweight who appears to be good. Bia Mesquita destroys Irina Alexeva. Irina Alexeva had already been on the cut counter. I think she's officially been chopped up into pieces, and we can be done with her as the -650 favorite. Bia Mesquita dismantles her to the round 2 rear naked chokehold. And Bia is now 7-0 with all of her wins coming by submission. Actually, 6-0. I think she came in 5-0. Yeah. So 36 significant strikes to 6, 61 total strikes to 17, 2 of 3 on takedowns for 5 minutes of control time. Round 1, I have no idea. No idea how Irina Alexeva survived. She suffered 56 total strikes and only landed 3. Round 2, Bia literally just took her down, locked in a rear naked choke, and was like, game over. I'm doing this right here. So Bia Mesquita, excellent work. In women's bantamweight division, let's not play around. Daria Zelenikova is ranked at number 15. She is really primed to break in someone like Bia Mesquita. So let's not even dilly-dally. Let's get her right to the rankings. They could even have her fight Misha Tate at 13. Give her some big names like that. If she could submit Misha Tate, that would be impressive. But Bia Mesquita getting our second performance bonus of the night. This was excellent work. I mean, can't get much better than that. Really can't. Good job, Bia Mesquita. As for Irina Alexeva, her current record is 5-4. She is 1-3 in the UFC. She hasn't won a fight since April 2023. She's on a 3-fight losing streak. Goodbye, Irina Alexeva. You never did much in the UFC, and I'm sorry to say that to your face. Next up, men's heavyweight division. One of the best knockouts of the year as Vitor Petrino puts Thomas Pearson's lights out. I mean, I'm talking a flailing UFC EA Sports 5 looking knockout. Thomas Pearson, I'm sorry you were put on the highlight reel. And this whole fight, you know, round 1, Vitor Petrino dropped Thomas. Thomas landed 1 significant strike in round 1. Vitor landed 13, was going for some takedowns. You know, he defended 6 from Thomas Pearson in round 1, defended 8 for the whole fight. Thomas going 0 of 8 on takedowns. And Vitor was really using just some control time on the ground in round number 1. Round 2, fought all on the feet, bit of clinch work. Vitor clearly having the power edge. And then round 3, 26 seconds in, I mean, literally just out of nowhere, Vitor just throws like an overhand and just clips Thomas. These arms go flailing. He face plants down, and Vitor gets the highlight reel knockout, gets a 50K performance bonus. And he is now 2-0 at heavyweight, 2-0 in 2025 as well. And similar to Bia Mesquita, one big win like that, and you're ready for the rankings. And there's actually a couple options here. You know, we could maybe have him fight Muhammad Usman. There's an option for that. There's also an option he fights Mick Parkin, Walter Walker. We'll have to see, but I definitely do like Vitor Petrino. We can even have him fight like a Kenny Nchukwu, if you will. Taito Iwasa, I'd even give him, but I mean, great work from Vitor Petrino. After being at one point on a 2-fight losing skid in 2024, He has since bounced back in a very dominant way. So good work for Vitor Petrino. As for Thomas the Train Peterson, you know, he's a 1-2 in the year. He has since gone 2-3 in the UFC, and I predict he will fight someone debuting. You know, Louis Sutherland, someone who is just debuting off of the Contender Series. Anyone like that is who Thomas Pearson will be taking on next. So definitely someone scary. I mean, even one of the Dana White's Contender Series fighters we mentioned earlier in the episode, those could be names next for our boy. Actually, how about the, who's the one guy I picked? Oh my gosh, what was his name from Uzbekistan? It was Azamat Nurfatali. I think, you know, I think that's who you're getting fed to, Thomas Pearson. After that, the only incorrect fight we predicted on the whole card, Rafael Filho submits Clayton Carpenter with the Kimura with 18 seconds left. I was shocked at this. I really was. I thought more highly of Clayton Carpenter, but clearly not. And, you know, the kid, he's, you know, he's kind of young. He's 29. You know, I suppose he's in his prime years, but was doing good on the feet. But once Filho landed a takedown, he's able to get into side control and locked in Kimura. And, you know, ref had no option but to stop it. So Rafael Filho, impressive work to you, my friend. Gets his 11th career submission, gets his 16th career finish of 17 wins, and ends the year on a big finish. Can't complain at all. But I find it weird that this man lost to Alan Nascimento in May and is now beating Clayton Carpenter. I just find it very interesting. MMA math is such a fun and interesting thing. So Filho, like I said, I think him and Lucas Rocha would deliver a fantastic matchup. And as for Clayton Carpenter, I mean, a rough year. Rough year for the kid. At one point, he was on the verge of the rankings, and now he's been defeated twice in 2025, both of his career defeats. So, run it back. Him versus Stuart Nicole, you know, loser. Should we do him against Lucas Rocha? No, let's do Stuart Nicole and Clayton Carpenter and Rafael Filho and Lucas Rocha. Matchmaking winners and losers in the flyweight division on the same card. No one's ready for the rankings of any of those four fighters. But good work to Filho, getting the round one Kimura. Good work. Next up, Michael Aswell Jr. Yeah. Yeah, Lucas Almeida was clearly compromised here. Clearly had a hand injury. Clearly didn't make weight. Didn't look good. And Michael Aswell utterly killed him. Two knockdowns in under a minute. 30 significant strikes to 9. One of the cleanest knockouts I've seen. I mean, this man was really holding this guy's face in his hand, just slapping him, just relentlessly clipping him with hooks across the face. So dominant work for Michael Aswell. Gets his 6th career knockout. Good job, Michael. Really good. 6 knockouts and 11 wins, and picks up his first UFC victory. He debuted earlier in May on short notice, lost to Bellagio Key, and now he gets a round one knockout. So Michael Aswell Jr., we will have you. You know, there is a lot of depth to the men's featherweight division. I think I have your next opponent because I like matchmaking on the same cards. We'll talk about that in a second. As for Lucas Almeida, I mean, 2 straight losses. He's currently gone 2-4 in the UFC. Never has amounted to much. I think it's time we cut him, especially after showing up with what looked like a broken hand. And also at 34, does he have anything left to offer? Like, Michael Aswell's 25 in his prime at 34. Yeah, I think Lucas Almeida, he got 2 wins in the UFC, but other than that, your time here has come to an end. Now, this is who is going to take on Michael Aswell Jr. next. Khan Offaly. Genghis Khan gets it done with the round one rear naked choke. And this was as simple as Ricardo Ramos was just spamming submission attempts for no reason early on. Eventually, Khan Offaly just went for a takedown and was able to stay on top, work what he needed to. Eventually took the back and locked in a rear naked choke. And 3 minutes in, Ricardo Ramos tapped. And that was that. Khan Offaly gets it done. Simple money. 6th career submission, 8th career finish. He'll improve to a very nice 13-4 and picks up his first UFC win. Good work to Khan Offaly. I mean, I think him and Michael Aswell match up perfectly. They both lost their first 2 fights, and now they have 1 with a good finish here in round 1. So, fight kind of writes itself, and, you know, nothing to complain about here. He did what he had to do, survived some submission attempts, and gets it done. As for Ricardo Ramos, similar scenario. 2 straight losses, 1-4 in his last 5. And to be fair, you know, this man holds a record of 17-8, and 6 of those losses have came since 2020. He's gone 3-6 since 2020, and, you know, just pre-COVID, Ricardo was a killer. He was 5-1 in the UFC and since hasn't done much. So Ricardo Ramos went 0-2 in 2025, and I think he's going to be 0-3 as that third loss will be his UFC contract not being renewed. So bye-bye to Ricardo Ramos as the underdog. Conoffley gets it done. Good work, and I expected it, and it happened. So I was very pleased, you could say. Next up, heavyweight division, Mario Pinto, Renata Dinez. I mean, Mario Pinto, knowing what he had to do. Did you know he trained with Tom Aspinall ahead of this fight? These are things I would like to know before I go and make predictions. I really would. So very glad I picked Mario Pinto to win this because he destroyed Renata Dinez. I'm actually a little perplexed at how Renata Dinez made it this far, but 29 significant strikes to 1, 87 total strikes to 4, goes 3-4 on takedowns for 7.5 minutes of control time. The entire fight was 9 minutes and 10 seconds, which means he controlled like 80% of this. Round 1, you know, was going a bit takedown heavy, 2 of 2. And was really working on the ground and pound, was trying for some submissions. He really was controlling him well. And I'm impressed Renata Dinez made it to round 2. But once we got into round 2, I mean, Renata Dinez didn't land a single strike. Mario took him down right off the bat. Eventually wound up in full mount and just started laying on some nasty ground and pound. I mean, this stuff was brutal to witness. And once it was up and once it was over, there was nothing left to be done, my friend. I mean, dominant work from Mario Pinto getting the round 2 TKO to get his 7th career finish, 8th career, or no, 7th career knockout, 8th career finish, and improved to 12-0. That's right, undefeated. Oh, no, he's 11-0, undefeated, and he's 2-0 in the UFC. You know, good work in 2025, 2 round 2 knockouts. Don't get much better than that. So, I don't know what to do with him. I think he might have a bit more potential per se than, who did we mention earlier, Vitor Petrino, in terms of the heavyweight division. I'd maybe like to definitely see him against a Mick Parkin, against maybe even Marcin Tybura, you know, throw him right to a gatekeeper off the bat because he looked pretty good. He looked really good in this one. As for Renata Dinez, just looked a step slow. He really did. And at 34, I don't know. Went 1-1 this year. He's 1-2 in his last 3 fights. Both of his career losses have come by round 2 TKO. I do think they'll bring him back, but similar scenario to Thomas Pearson. It's going to be against a newbie, and it's probably going to be against someone from Dana White's Contender Series. So Mario Pinto gets it done and looks impressive doing it. Then, next up, welterweight division, Joel Alvarez, Vicente Luque. I don't know what to make of this. I really don't, because Vicente Luque got destroyed here. 30-26s across the board. 89 significant strikes to 30. 197 total strikes to 31. Joel Alvarez landed a takedown in round 3 for no reason and just controlled him for the entire fight. Same thing happened in round 2. He somehow wound up on top and just controlled him. But he couldn't put him away. So Joel Alvarez's 100% finishing rate is now up. He has improved to 23-3. The winning streak is still at 4 now. So that's impressive. But not being able to finish Vicente Luque kind of, you know, was weird. It was very weird. Now, as for Vicente, you could run back the Santiago Ponzinibbio fight, but this guy went 0-2 in 2025. 1-3 in his last 4. Mind you, he is 2-5 in his last 7, you know, in this new version of Vicente Luque that's not good. And I don't know if I'm really craving the Santiago Ponzinibbio fight. And Vicente's only 33. Joel's 32. Like, they're similar in age. It's just crazy career-wise where they're going to be at. So I'm gonna give Vicente Luque the benefit of the doubt that we can run back the Santiago Ponzinibbio fight. But for Joel Alvarez, big things are ahead. And I think those big things are going to come in the names of Mike Mallett and Kevin Holland. They fight next weekend. Winner of that versus Joel Alvarez, I think, is the trajectory we should move in. But, I mean, at the end of the day, good win for Joel. He was a massive minus 500 favorite, performed like it. And Vicente, it's just kind of sad to see this, you know, lesser version of himself. With that, we got into the co-main event, and we almost saw a robbery here. Anyone who says Montel Jackson won this fight is just being ridiculous. Now, totals for the fight, 30 significant strikes to 23, same for total, in favor of Montel Jackson. Devison goes 2-5 on takedowns for 2 minutes and 18 seconds. Montel goes 1-1 on takedowns for only 2 seconds of control time. Round 1 went to Devison. You know, Devison landed a takedown, separated himself, not much happened. Round two, Devison landed another takedown, and Montel outstruck him 14-7, but didn't look impressive whatsoever. Like, he didn't land anything. If anything, Devison landed and gained the takedown, separated himself. Round two, similar thing. Both men land 8 significant strikes each. Montel lands a takedown, which is immediately gotten up by Devison Figueiredo. And for some reason, Fabio Alves scored this rounds 1 and 3 for Montel Jackson, which makes absolutely no sense. So almost witnessed a robbery. Glad we didn't. But yeah, Devison Figueiredo gets it done by split decision, as he should have. As he should have. Improves the 25-5 and snaps his little two-fight winning streak. So he was ranked at 6. He'll remain at 6. And he's got some options coming up. He really does. Amin Zabi's taking on Marlon Vera. If Amin wins that, him versus Devison Figueiredo could be an option. You could run Devison Figueiredo versus Song Yedong. If, you know, Piotr Jan loses to Merab, you could run back that fight. We could just run Sean O'Malley and Devison Figueiredo. I could get behind that, actually. Devison Figueiredo, Sean O'Malley, two former champs. Why not? Make it happen. As for Montel Jackson, only his third loss in his career, does snap his 6-fight winning streak, which is unfortunate, but he can clearly hang with the top of the division. So I say him versus Rob Font, run that fight next, or even Henry Cejudo. Give him another legend of the game. But yeah, Montel Jackson was not robbed at all. This was just a boring fight, end of the day. So good work to Devison Figueiredo, keeping himself intact. And, you know, at 37, he's knocking off a guy trying to take his spot. And as a plus 220 underdog, this felt free. Especially going to the decision, it really felt like Devison got this one done. And at the end of the day, split decision, unanimous decision. The victor's hand was the God of War, Devison Figueiredo. With that, we got into our main event, Charles Oliveira and Matheus Gamrot. And let me just say, I never doubted Charles Oliveira. I thought this was going to be easy, and at the end of the day, it was freaking easy, as Charles almost submits him in round one. Matheus survives. By the way, Matheus landed a takedown, super questionable, and Charles just starts throwing up arm attempts and arm triangles and arm bars, and it was fantastic to see. Round two, Charles lands a takedown, immediately is able to take the back, and submits him. Easy money. Charles Oliveira improves to 36-11. Gets his 24th career win in the UFC, and gets his 22nd submission, making also 33 career submissions of 36 wins. This man's a killer. It really is. And here's another fun fact. Every person Ilia Topuria has finished in the UFC has gone on to win their next fight. And it's just a fun fact. So, you know, we've now see a pattern here. If Islam ever knocks someone out, they're winning their next fight. But yeah, Charles made this look easy, gets the final performance bonus of the night. And I believe he called out Max Holloway. That feels like the next fight you do. I know he was mentioning a McGregor fight, but that's not going to happen. BMF fight for Max Holloway. Look, Max is not fighting for a belt anytime soon. Charles doesn't fight for a belt anytime soon. Let's make it a BMF main event. Do it on the new Paramount deal. They want to do it at the White House. I don't know if I want that. I think it could just be its own event, but Charles Oliveira steals the night, was for some reason at one point an underdog during the week. Oh man, make the people who make odds make sense, because clearly they don't know anything about the UFC. Now, as for Matheus Gamrot, he was ranked at number 8. This is the first time in his career he's ever been finished, and to be fair, I saw this going. I really did. He's now going to enter gatekeeper territory, if you want to call it that. I mean, he is 34. Might I say, but there's a couple options. You could have him face an Adam Moicano, Benoit Saint Denis. You could have him fight Nazim Sadikov, was a name I saw raised, Grant Dawson, literally anyone in the bottom 15 or just out of the rankings at lightweight. So Matheus Gamrot, he'll be back. I mean, he doesn't even have a bad UFC record. Professional record wise, I mean, the guy's still 25-4, which is a good record. So at the end of the day, Charles Oliveira gets it done. He will remain the just legend that he is, and especially now going 18-0 in his career in Brazil. This is probably the final time he'll fight in Brazil unless he retires here, but man, that's crazy. Out of his 30-plus wins, 18 of them have came in Brazil. So clearly, Charles Oliveira, when he fights in Brazil, is a completely different breed. So good work for Charles getting it done, and ends the night with a round 2 sub and an extra 50K performance bonus. But with that, that's all we have for today's episode. Ladies and gentlemen, we got another fun weekend. ahead, week 7 of the NFL, UFC Vancouver, recapping the final episode of Dana White's Contender Series for the season, and starting my brand new job. So by the time you listen to this, I will probably be on the train heading to work. So guys, you know, life is crazy. Life is crazy, and you never know where it will take you. So just always be prepared for the journeys in life, and always be ready for the challenges that God throws at you. So without further ado, everyone make it an amazing week, have an amazing life, and I will catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.